This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, filling in for Terry Gross. As half the team Cheech and Chong, Tommy Chong became famous in the 70s for comedy performances, records, and movies about getting high on marijuana. Their characters were always stoned and were often being chased by inept cops and narcotics agents. Here's a scene from the beginning of Cheech and Chong's first movie, Up in Smoke. They're in a car when Chong offers Cheech a huge joint, almost the size of a baseball bat. Cheech asks what's in it, and Tommy responds.
Mostly Maui Wowie, man.
Yeah?
But it's got some Labrador in it.
What's Labrador?
It's dog.
What?
Yeah, my dog ate my stash, man. Had it on the table and the little ate it, man.
Yeah?
So I had to farm around the little baggie for 3 days before I got it back. Really blew the dog's mind.
You mean we're smoking dog, man?
Cheech and Chong starred in 7 films and had 6 comedy albums that went gold. In the mid-80s, Cheech and Chong went their own ways. Cheech Marin has since been in several movies and the TV series Nash Bridges and Judging Amy. Chong has played a stoner on That 70s Show and has appeared in the 2006 tour of The Marijuana Logs. He's just written The I Chong, Meditations from the Joint. It's a memoir and an account of his 9 months in prison. In 2003, he pleaded guilty to violating federal drug paraphernalia laws for his family's internet business that specialized in selling bongs made of blown glass. He spoke to Terry last year.
You've made your career, you've made millions of dollars doing comedy about marijuana and LSD. Before you were arrested for your son's business selling bongs and pipes, had you ever been arrested for anything drug-related?
I'm very embarrassed to say that I've never been arrested before. It was a burden that I had to carry into prison. You know, people wanted to know why I was there. I had to kind of mumble, you know, cover my mouth and go, bongs. No, when they arrested me, they thought for sure. In fact, Bill Riley, O'Reilly, you know, the commentator on Fox, he got on Leno one time, right after my bust, and said that the reason I got jail time was that I was busted for like 17 times, 17 priors, as he put it. But I've never been busted, and they triple-checked that one to make sure. But no, I've never been busted. Well, you know, we got so many fans, like at the border and cops and everything else, and so whenever they catch me with a little bit of pot, they'd kind of laugh and tell me about how they heard our records and let me go.
Oh, I know. I've always wondered about that. If cops often recognize you, because of course, in your movies, you're always being chased by cops, and you know, having to hide the largest joint known to man. So tell me more about what's happened over the years when cops did recognize you, or you know, border guards recognized you.
Oh yeah. Well, even coming in, I was just in Toronto with my wife. We were performing, coming back across the border, they recognized me. And but yeah, we have a lot of border guards. I do it in my act, you know, about how they recognize me and let me go.
You mentioned that they recognize you and let you go. Do you mean that they found things and let you go in spite of it?
Yeah, they found stuff.
Mm-hmm,
okay. Right at the start of the Iraqi war, the first day, we're flying into Sioux City, Iowa, or flying out of it. We performed, my wife and I, and then gave me this big, beautiful glass bong water pipe, and I had it in my carry-on. And so when it went through the X-ray, you know, it created quite a stir. You know, the cops and everybody gathered around. They're pointing at the bong, you know. And the guy he talked into his lapel, like he called for backup or something, because he had this suspicious-looking water pipe in my knapsack. And then I told him who I was, and he went back to his lapel and said, "Disregard." And then I had some fans, some National Guardsmen, you know, with rifles and everything. They said, "Oh, can we walk to you, escort you to your gate?" And I said, "Sure." And so I got an escort, and, you know, it was great.
So what happened when you were arrested on February 3rd, 2003?
It was ridiculous. It was so scary in some ways. But the fact that I do movies, I live in Hollywood, you know, and I've been in so many shows, and that felt like a movie, a scene from an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, you know, where these guys bang on my door at 5:30 in the morning. They're DEA agents visors and flak jackets and automatic weapons and helicopters and Fox News trucks out in front. And they come in my house and bang on my door. I open the door. They come rushing in, running from room to room. It felt like an Iraqi, you know. And they're kicking in the doors. They're running, yelling, clear. And they, you know, with their guns pointed at everybody and pointed at me and says, and they kept saying to me, you're not under arrest. It was like Alice in Wonderland. You're not under arrest. And the reason they said that is that they didn't have to give me a warning. I didn't. And I said, I better get a lawyer. And they said, you don't need a lawyer. We'll tell you when you can get a lawyer. It was, and they grabbed all the computers they could find. They grabbed all the bongs they could find. And they didn't have marijuana on their search warrant.
So did you expect to get prison time, or did you expect?
No.
What did you expect?
I was in denial. I was hoping I'd get house arrest, you know, because I got a nice house in Pacific Palisades. You know, I was looking forward to hanging around for a year, you know, working on my garden and just swimming in the pool and just kicking back. But, you know, and it's ridiculous. I'm surrounded by lawyers where I live. And so the lawyer across the street, he gave me the best advice ever. Yeah, he said, well, do the time. You know, you're not going to beat the feds. Nobody does.
Now, you said that you took the rap to spare your son and your wife from having to do time. Mm-hmm. So what did they say to you about taking the rap?
My wife and my son?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my son was, well, you know, he felt really, really bad, you know. But, you know, rather me do time than him. So he went back to school, and he's becoming a lawyer. He's getting a law degree now, so and a business degree. And my wife, well, she's so gorgeous. And we've been together for, like, almost forever, you know, 30 years. And she was quite upset. But then, you know, she'd never been alone. You know, so she lived alone. She had a single life for 9 months, and she enjoyed it. She got along fine without me. She was going out to clubs, dancing, having a great time. You know, and visiting me once in a while, and looking so good. And then everything, because it was such a non-crime. You know, it's like the universe said, don't worry, man. You're going to enjoy yourself. We're going to make everything work for you. You know, karma was good.
So what was the prison like that you spent 9 months in?
It was a camp. It was like a... But what it was, when you drove up to the camp, it was near Bakersfield, a place called Taft. And it's the main prison, which houses, you know, the more dangerous people, had barbed wire all around it, you know, walls and very... ominous looking place, and they take you in there, you know, and that's what freaked my wife out, because when they took me in there, it was like I was going to be in there. But then they held me in, you know, in a little holding cell for about an hour, and then I got in a little pickup truck and we drove around the back where they have a camp, and it's a boundary camp where they have a chalk line around the track around the whole camp, and you just can't go over that chalk line. And so there was no fences and no armed guards. And it was a camp. It was like a sports camp in a way, you know, or a religious camp, because a lot of religious things going on, you know, a lot of different factions, you know, a lot of Catholics. And I got into the Indian religion, the American Indian, the sweat lodge. So we used to sweat every Saturday.
So what were most of the other prisoners in for?
White-collar crimes, a lot of white-collar crimes, a lot of pot growers, you know. They love arresting potheads or pot growers because, you know, now they got people to take care of their gardens, and, you know, and we're mellow people, so we're the best kind of model prisoners.
Hey, I got something to mail you out, man. You're just freaking out. Here. Take these.
What?
Man. Take these. This will mellow you out, man.
What is this, man?
Just take them. Hey, don't take those, man.
What?
I almost gave you the wrong shit, man.
Hey, man, I already took them, man.
Whoa.
Hey, what do you mean?
Whoa. Wow, man.
Hey, what was that, man?
You just ate the most acid I've ever seen anybody eat in my life.
Hey, man, I never had no acid before, man.
Geez, I hope you're not busy for about a month.
I'm gonna die, man. That stuff's gonna make me die, man.
No, that's good acid.
Hey, man, I never had it before, man. That's gonna make me die. Well, it's gonna make me freak out, man. Man, I seen those guys walk around my neighborhood had too many acid, man. Their head looked like a pumpkin like that, man.
Relax, man. Hey, mellow out, man. Now just go. Oh.
What?
Do it, man. Oh.
That was Tommy Chong and Cheech Marin from their first film, Up in Smoke. Chong spoke to Terry Gross in 2005. She asked him about his childhood. He grew up in Canada near Calgary.
Your father was Chinese and your mother part Scottish, part Irish. So was like ethnic identity an important issue for you when you were growing up?
Oh, big time, you see. Our little town, we couldn't afford any black people or Mexicans. So we had a double for them. So we were the designated, brown people that had to be picked on, So I learned to fight at a very early age. But I was lucky I had a big brother that used to do all my fighting for me. But we grew up, it was a tough childhood, especially with hockey and all that stuff in there.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were in a band called Bobby Taylor and the Vancouvers that signed with Motown and had a semi-hit called Does Your Mama Know About Me? So how did you start doing comedy after doing music?
I was in a black band. I was in the only non-black in a black band. And one thing about being in a black, it was jazz blues band, and there's nothing but comedy in those bands. If you want to hear the best comedy in the world, just hang out with a jazz or blues band, and you will laugh yourself sick. That's how I got my start in comedy. It's just hanging out. And I never talked. When I was in the band, I never hardly said a word. I just listened. And so when Cheech and I got together, and then I had to come up with material, I had a lifetime worth of material.
How did you get together?
Cheech was up in Canada during the Vietnam War. He was part of the secret army that was up in Canada just in case a Viet Cong attack from Alaska.
Was he avoiding the draft?
Well, that was part of it. He was just out of university, and he was up there. And I had a, with the Vancouvers and that, we had a couple of nightclubs. We bought a couple of nightclubs because we needed a place to work. And one of the clubs was a strip club where it was actually Vancouver's first almost naked nightclub with the girls naked, that is. And I had seen an improv group called The Committee in San Francisco, and I seen another one called Second City in Chicago, like the original guys. And there again, I got this musician mind. I remembered the bits. And so I started showing them to the actors up in Canada. I put an improvisational group together with the girls. And so we
with
had
the
naked
strippers.
We had naked improv. It was incredible.
Oh, but you weren't naked, were you?
At times, but no frontal stuff, It's too cold up there. And we don't want to blow the myth. So... the girls got naked, but on cue. We'd do little bits called like the pajama party, where they pretend they were in their living room and they change into their pajamas. Very sexy and very funny. And then Cheech joined up halfway through. We needed a straight man because I had another partner that had long hair. I had real long hair, and we needed a guy with short hair to play the cop parts. There was always a cop in there somewhere. But Cheech joined the group, and then when the group broke up, as groups do, Cheech and I stayed together, and we were going to form a band, because he's a singer, and I'm a guitar player, and I always thought I was just going to do this improv for a little while and then go back to a band. But then we formed a band, but we never played. We just went out and did comedy and in front of all these rock and roll kids, about a couple of thousand screaming. Kids all sat down and watched our comedy. And so I knew that we were going to be very big in the comedy world.
So how did you start doing drug humor?
Well, it was because of the audience, It was the times, and it was the late 60s. And the audience, they were all stoned, so we would just sort of do something they could relate to. And like at L.A., for instance, when we were in Canada, we didn't even know Cheech was Mexican because, you know, he had an education and he'd speak, and, you know, like white guys. And but when we come down to L.A., with Cheech and I, we were in a club one night, and we weren't going over. We did one show, and then the second show. It was a dance club, and dancers don't like being interrupted, you know, for comedy, so they weren't that receptive. So I told Cheech, well, you know, there must be a character, you know, that they can relate to. And he said, well, there's one, but it's kind of detrimental to the Chicano population. I said, well, that's what we're doing. That's what we're comedians, man. And so he did it. And from that day on, I knew stardom awaited us. Because first time Cheech goes, hey, Red Freak, want a ride, man? We're hitchhiking. And then he talks about his car. Oh, it was magic.
So did you used to get stoned when you performed?
Yeah, at times. Usually the last show of the last night, Cheech and I used to smoke up a little bit just to make it interesting. But I haven't been stoned for 2 years, and so I do shows now totally straight. And like I say, there's no difference. I still forget everything.
Well, when you were doing your character, was it easier, like in the 60s and 70s, was it easier to do the character when you were straight or when you were high?
Oh, straight. Can't do anything when you're high. Especially movies. Movies is horrible. You got to be straight. Because you got cues, you know. You know. One time, Cheech and I smoked up, and we're sitting in a car. It was a car scene. And the radio says, okay, we're rolling. And for some reason, we were waiting for Let's Go or something. And we sat there for about a half hour till the camera. They said, we're rolling. Oh, you know, we burned up too much film. So no. Life is better straight, but by the way. It's so much better straight. But if you need to smoke, then that's another matter.
Cheech and Chong split up in 1986. Why did you split up?
Well, I joke about it, but it's kind of true, too. I didn't even know we were broken up till I went to the last Cheech and Chong movie and I wasn't in it. And I still have fans say, you know, my favorite Cheech and Chong movie, you know, my favorite movie of yours is Born in East L.A., and I was not in that movie. We broke up. The string had run out, you know, everybody, you know, from Sylvester Stallone, Madonna, everybody, you have a string of hits, Michael Jackson, everybody, you got the Beatles, you don't stay on top forever. Because what happens, you do 3, 4, 5, and then you start competing against yourself. And now you're 5, 6, 7 years older than your first thing, and you don't have that kind of energy. But Cheech and I, we ran out. That was it.
So, you know, the Cheech and Chong characters are going to be in their 60s in your new movie. So what are these characters going to be like?
Well, the title, the working title that I like is Grumpy Old Stoners. I think that's about it. In fact, I can tell you a little bit about it. Cheech has got a problem because when we hook up, you know, he's getting kicked off these movies, you know, because he doesn't look like Cheech and he's bald. So he's having a problem with his age, you know. Me, I'm still living with my mother. Who is the biggest pothead? But I'm on probation, so I can't smoke pot. Cheech's health stops him from smoking pot, so we come up with this solution where it's a salve, you know, like a lotion, and it's pot based, and it's magic because it doesn't show up in the drug test and it gets you just as high, if not higher, and it's all the good stuff about pot, you know, it's all the mind altering substances. And so if you're mean and evil, it turns you into mild and sweet. And so that's part of the plot. And then there's, you know, we're being chased by Stadenko again, the cop. And it's a big fun fest movie. It's going to be great.
Have you ever thought about how many times you've said the word man in your career?
We used to do manectomies in our records. We used to do. We had to take them out because it was every other word was man. Hey man, you know what I mean, man. Hey man, what are you doing, man? And some of the records we'd go in there and just take out the man, just so there wouldn't be so many of them. quite a few. In fact, that's what I call my character, Pedro and Man.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Tommy Chong, thanks so much.
Thank you, dear.
Tommy Chong, formerly of the comedy team Cheech and Chong, spoke last year with Terry Gross. His new book is The I Chong, Meditations from the Joint.